Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 6th day of March, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call, and I had some trouble deciding how to get this new show started for today, and trying to keep the disgust out of my voice in the process. No, I almost certainly didn't succeed, and I'm going to tell you why. Let's start with this one from the Daily Mail. It says, the chemicals released in East Palestine revealed in this banner headline from a World War I choking agent, and that would be phosgene gas, folks, to known carcinogens. Daily Mail looks at the substances and their known health risks after the toxic train crash. Well, here's the problem. They're not about to look at all of them. As a matter of fact, the first thing I did was look through this entire article, do a search, and see if I could find the word dioxin. Hey, guess what? It's not in here at all. And it is far, far, far more deadly than all the other things that are in here combined. But the word doesn't even appear in the piece. Now, is the story therefore a lie? Not unless you realize it's a lie by omission. But what this really is another example of a limited hangout. Hey, let's just tell people part of the truth. Oh, it's really scary. Not nearly as scary as if we told you the whole truth, however. And I could probably go through the whole show just turning this one over. But let's just hit some of the highlights. The bullet points that they always list under the main headline say things like, cancer-causing vinyl chloride was one of the six chemicals on board the trains which derailed on February the 3rd. It was burned during Norfolk Southern's controlled release. There's a really big whopper of these substances days later to avoid an explosion. Booga, booga, booga. Yeah, an explosion, folks, would have been trivial compared to the controlled burn, towering black mushroom cloud and all. It polluted the entire Ohio River Basin and most of Pennsylvania and New York. And that's not counting all that's going to fall out later. Fears about the toxic train explosion in Ohio were amplified this week, says the first line in the piece, when independent researchers determined the air in East Palestine had, quote, unusually high levels of toxic chemicals. And they didn't even tell you about all of them. That assessment contradicted an earlier conclusion made by the U.S. Environmental Protection, SIC, agency that claimed that it was safe, despite dozens of toxic substances being released into the area, either by the derailment or as a byproduct of the combustion of the chemicals. Well, there's at least a bit of truth in there. They're just not even going to mention the deadliest component of that toxic combustion, dioxins. They do say this, though. Many commentators have described the toxic train incident as Ohio's Chernobyl, and there are growing fears of health problems, gee, do you think, down the line. And DailyMail.com has investigated the chemicals found, well, at least a few of them, in East Palestine, and documented their health risks. Independent testing, it says, done by Texas A&M and Carnegie Mellon University, published last week, found that the air in East Palestine contains higher than normal concentrations of 9 potentially harmful chemicals. They have the list here, even though it's hideously incomplete. And notice, folks, that this is only the air they're talking about, not water or soil or anything else that's been contaminated. Acrolein, benzene, vinyl chloride, butadiene, naphthalene, oxylene, trichloroethylene, trichloroethane, and p-xylene. And the word dioxin, again, does not appear, even though it's far deadlier in concentrations that are arguably far less than would be measured, even if they were looking for them, which they don't even remotely want to mention. Oh, by the way, down in the piece, this little whopper appears, and how's this for a nice example of just how a limited hangout is really done? It says, acrolein was calculated to be the biggest concern for residents, unquote, and ha, ha, ha. And I guess when you're talking about cover-ups intended to kill people, and that seems to be the obvious implication here, it's hard not to mention the most evil man on planet Earth for who knows how long, Dr. Mengele, a.k.a. Tony Fauci, who offshored the banned gain-of-function research to make bat coronaviruses more transmissible to humans. That's at least the way Zero Hedge's headline from Tyler Durden puts it. And he's been accused now, finally at least, by congressional investigators of having prompted the fabrication of what? Yet another act of treason and perjury? In this case, the fabrication of a paper by a cadre of so-called scientists, yeah, sure, bought and paid for, you know the real word there, aimed at disproving the COVID-19 lab leak theory. And even that is a limited hangout, folks. It's not a lab leak. It was a deliberate bioweapon developed and released on the entire world. But hey, they're not about to even go there, are they? On February 1, 2020, Fauci and his alleged boss, NIH Director Dr. Francis Collins, What, you thought maybe they were going to admit it was Bill Gates? And at least 11 other so-called scientists participated, says the piece, in a conference call during which several of them, before they got the word, I guess, warned that COVID-19 may have been leaked, or in fact, early research that I remember talking about not long after that, even covered by Zero Hedge, too, made it clear that it didn't happen by accident. In other words, it had to have been developed in a lab, and that it may have been leaked from a lab in Wuhan, China, and may have been, yeah, sure, it was absolutely, positively, intentionally, genetically manipulated. We've known that for years. Congress may even eventually decide they've figured it out, and therefore, let's try to do an investigation. 3 days after the call, four of the participants from that call, and we've heard some of these names over the last few days, Scripps research virologist Christian Anderson, University of Sydney virologist Edward Holmes, Tulane School of Medicine virologist Robert Gary, and University of Edinburgh virologist Andrew Rombaut, as well as Columbia University virologist Ian Lipkin, seemingly discarded any concerns they might have had over the lab leak and drafted instead something called the Proximal Origin of SARS-CoV-2, which they sent to Fauci and Collins. Isn't that convenient? Also heavily involved, yet not yet credited, was Dr. Jeremy Farrar, current chief scientist at who? Oh, yeah. Evil Incarnate Central, the World Health Organization. As a related aside, it says, the Washington Examiner revealed last week that two authors of this proximal origin bit of BS, who initially expressed concerns over that lab leak and then changed their tune, that would be Anderson and Gary, received, yep, we talked about this too, millions of bucks in NIH grants under, guess who? Dr. Mengele. Now, according to the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Plandemic, they spelled it wrong, Fauci prompted the very creation of that paper. Purpose? To cover up, to discredit the so-called lab leak hypothesis, and even call it a conspiracy theory. Quote, new evidence released by the Select Subcommittee today suggests that Dr. Evil, you know the name, I don't think that guy's name should be put in the same sentence with that title, even once it's been discredited, prompted the drafting of a publication that would disprove the lab leak theory, and the authors of the paper skewed available evidence to achieve that goal. And Dr. Jeremy Farrar went uncredited despite his significant involvement. So, for those following the bouncing ball, writes Tyler Durden, the U.S. was doing risky, to put it mildly, gain-of-function research on U.S. soil until 2014, when the Obama regime, at least supposedly, banned it. 4 months before the ban, Fauci offshored it, almost like they had it planned, huh? To Wuhan, through the now infamous New York non-profit, yeah sure, EcoHealth Alliance. And maybe, folks, there were even some labs in the Ukraine involved, but I guess for now that's not part of the limited hangout. After SARS-CoV-2 broke out or was released down the street from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Fauci engaged in a massive campaign to deny even the possibility of a lab leak from the lab he funded. And, of course, the waste stream bought and paid for whore media went right along with it and pushed it for 2 full years. And instead tried to pin the blame on a yet-to-be-discovered zoonotic intermediary species. Remember pangolins? And if you'd like to dig even deeper, says the piece, this is perhaps the best, most comprehensive summary of the proximal origin timeline, courtesy of this latest letter. Here's another story, this time courtesy of Breitbart.com, that indicates, yeah, Congress is actually at least trying to pretend they're investigating some other things, too. Way, way too late, but there you go. The Treasury Department, it says, will testify before the House Oversight Committee on Friday about its withholding of 150, count 'em. That's a lot more than your average crime family. 150 suspicious activity reports, or SARs, generated by and on behalf of the Biden crime family, you know, Hunter and his big daddy who gets his cut right off the top, and their associates by unusual foreign or high-dollar transactions. The Treasury's Jonathan C. Davidson, it says, Assistant Secretary for Legislative Affairs, will testify before the committee about why the agency has hitherto refused to provide those SARs, which often contain evidence of potential criminal activities, such as money laundering or fraud or even, what, buying elections and using a war to cover up how bad things were? The House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, is investigating Jim and Hunter Biden, along with Eric Schwerin, for 9 violations, including but not limited to wire fraud and money laundering. And during the so-called investigations, the Treasury has repeatedly stonewalled Comer's request for the SARs because the reports are a treasure trove of information that will provide details about the family's foreign business transactions, along with knowledge, it says, of whether the man masquerading as president, the senile face diaper wearer, whether he remains compromised, and wouldn't that be kind of obvious, by various foreign governments. Then can you spell CCP and or Ukraine and or who knows how many others, and they're probably not going to tell you those either, through his family's business connections, you know, the ones that he lied about over and over again. Comer said Saturday in a press release he intends to examine legislative solutions to ensure that maybe someday, anyway, Congress might have timely access. Well, I don't think that's possible anymore, but at least belated access to the SARs. He said, we're concerned that the Treasury Department is acting in bad faith to produce these documents to the Oversight Committee when we know that it's already produced them to another congressional office, wrote Comer. At next week's hearing, a Treasury Department official can explain to Congress and the American people why the department is hiding critical information, as if we didn't already have a pretty good idea. What's the point of rigging elections, after all, if you can't get away with high crimes and misdemeanors, and maybe even outright treason, and kicking off World War III, too? And get this, if you still need a good laugh after all of that, in January, Davidson denied the committee's request for those 150 flagged SARs, citing, are you sitting down, quote, improper disclosure of relevant information that could... could reduce the Biden regime's efficiency and ability when it comes to, quote, conduct of law enforcement, intelligence, and national security activities. In other words, if people knew just what a corrupt bunch of scumbags they were, who would trust them for anything, for any reason? I mean, really, folks, just imagine how tough it would be to run a corrupt government if you became an international laughingstock for incompetence, criminality, and other things that... pretty much you'd have to be blind as a bat, maybe even a coronavirus COVID bat, not to have seen a long time ago. Now, I do like the fact that Breitbart goes into some of the details that the rest of the press doesn't like to talk about. Back as far as 2018, and again in 2020, Breitbart senior contributor and Government Accountability Institute president Peter Schweitzer published Secret Empires and Profiles in Corruption. Each of those two books hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list and exposed how Hunter Biden and his criminal daddy Joe flew aboard Air Force Two in 2013 to China before Hunter's firm then inked a $1.5 billion deal with a subsidiary of the Chinese government's Bank of China less than 2 weeks after the trip. What an amazing coincidence. Schweitzer's work also uncovered the Biden crime family's other vast and lucrative foreign deals and cronyism. Some of his folks might say acts of treason and sellout, compromising not only United States security, but as we've now seen, the entire nation. But there's more. Breitbart political editor Emma Jo Morris's investigative work at the New York Post on the Hunter Biden laptop from hell also captured some international headlines, although they didn't last very long, you may remember, when she, along with Miranda Devine, revealed that Joe Biden was intimately involved, despite having lied through his blankety-blanking, well, mask and teeth, in Hunter's businesses. And you know it, he even appeared to have a 10% stake in a company that the scion of the crime family formed with officials at the highest levels of, say it with me folks, the Chinese Communist Party. Now that story, as you might suspect, encouraged your host to go looking through the archives, and I found this from October of 2021. It certainly does raise all kinds of questions, like what is timely anymore when it comes to investigations, and how bad does something have to get before eventually the press might even report on it? Will they get away with it, I guess, in hindsight especially, is obvious. This came from Joe Hoft at the Gateway Pundit on October 21st, 2021, in what's called a breaking exclusive about how the scumbag-in-chief, then Vice President Joseph Biden, gave China, who else, a sweetheart deal back in 2013 that gave Chinese companies access to U.S. markets, and they didn't have to bother to fully comply with key U.S. regulations concerning financial reporting. Well, that certainly still rings true today, doesn't it? A few months later, guess who? The whoring, crack-smoking son, Hunter Biden, received $1.5 billion from China. And now that China's economy is failing, You gotta ask, who will pay for it? And you already know the answer, don't you? John Solomon has reported that that deal that the big guy brokered with China back in 2013 gave that country complete access to U.S. markets without having to comply with the same Sarbanes-Oxley Act accounting practices and risk disclosure required of American companies. Wrote John Solomon for Just the News, the concession was made in a little-noticed Memorandum of Understanding executed 7 years ago by the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, PCAOB, an alleged non-profit regulator empowered by Sarbanes-Oxley to ensure that U.S. investors are, get this, and ponder the irony, protected from making bad investments because of faulty audits or financial information. And that was basically before a pandemic torpedoed the entire U.S. and, of course, world economy along with it. According to transcripts from the Obama regime archives, the agreement was reached in May 2013 after Chinese leaders pleaded for improved access to capital markets and were willing to provide little access to some capital themselves, it would seem, in multiple meetings with then-Vice President Joe Biden. Explains Joe Hoff for TGP, the Sarbanes-Oxley legislation has cost U.S. companies millions, if not billions, in compliance costs since it was put in place after the collapse of Enron. For some reason, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Biden thought Chinese companies should not have to comply with these same requirements that now burden American companies to ensure accurate financial and key controls throughout operations worldwide. They're prepared at least annually at significant cost to the company, and I guess you could say that those foreign competitors that don't have to jump through those same hoops are at a significant competitive advantage. And here's a point the stories don't actually make, but I can't help but wonder about it. If, in fact, Sarbanes-Oxley actually does something productive and prevents people from being duped into making really bad investments in companies that are, well, let's just say, taking excessive risks and or are outright shams. In other words, if the Sarbanes-Oxley law actually did anything worth doing, and come on, man.
Come on, man.
Isn't that the essence of what liberal regulation of everything economic is ultimately supposed to be about? How could Biden possibly turn his back on fundamental liberal progressive leftist principles? Yeah, okay, cross my palm with silver, asked and answered. So Biden gave his communist Chinese puppet masters a pass on important transparency regulation, resulting in a deal which allowed Chinese companies to obtain billions, if not at this point trillions of dollars in capital not available in China. And a short time later in 2013, here's a shocker, I hope you're sitting down, China gave Hunter Biden $1.5 billion to, invest. I wonder if the big guy got a 10% cut on that, too. According to Peter Schweitzer's book, Secret Empires, How the American Political Class Hides Corruption and Enriches Family and Friends. He reminds us of something that, well, the waste stream will never want to tell you about, but many of us have known for years. When Hunter Biden, son of the then VP, and Christopher Hines, stepson of the chairman of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, later Secretary of State, and if that name rings a bell, think ketchup, were creating an international private equity firm. It was anchored by the Hines family alternative investment fund called Rosemont Capital. That new firm would be populated by political loyalists, who else, and positioned to strike really profitable deals overseas with foreign governments and officials with whom the United States government was negotiating. Or maybe now in hindsight we can say more appropriately, selling the family jewels. And you may recall this, too. In December of 2013, Hunter traveled to Beijing aboard Air Force Two with his daddy, the big guy. And an amazing coincidence happened just 10 days later. Hunter's company, Rosemont Seneca, became a partner in the new investment company backed by the state-owned Bank of China. Today, though, China's economy is imploding. Its key market, 25% of its GDP, the property investment market, is failing. And with companies like Evergrande, it's worldwide news. China has off-balance sheet liabilities in the trillions that are not accurately reported. There's an amazing shocker. And the entities involved in this business are underwater and failing. So, asks Hoff, clearly just rhetorically, will Joe Biden be held accountable? Ha ha. When U.S. citizens and companies lose millions and more in the Chinese economic collapse. Oh, or worse still, when China decides the only way out, with its puppet on a string, is war.
All right, true confessions time. While I was looking for that particular clip, I found some others. These are all from a certain presidential debate, you might remember. And in hindsight, they look even more damning than they did when we knew or at least thought we knew, just how crooked this absolutely evil scumbag was. And while we still certainly don't know the rest of the story, at least the pieces are starting to really stink. Here's just a selection of a few of them.
I have not taken a penny from any foreign source ever in my life. We learned that this president paid 50 times the tax in China, has a secret bank account with China, does business in China, and in fact is talking about me taking money. I have not taken a single penny from any country whatsoever, ever.
I guess the operative word there is not a single penny. Oh, a few millions? Yeah, sure.
I have not taken a single penny from any country whatsoever, ever. Number one. Number two, this is a president. I have released all of my tax returns. 22 years. Go look at them. 22 years of my tax return.
Notice he didn't mention the suspicious activity reports.
You have not released a single solitary year of your tax return. What are you hiding? Why are you unwilling? The foreign countries are paying you a lot. Russia's paying you a lot. China's paying you a lot. And your hotels and all your businesses all around the country, all around the world. And China's building a new road to a new a golf course you have overseas. So what's going on here? Why don't release your tax return or stop talking about corruption?
Yeah, Donald, you don't begin to know corruption. Here's another one. The laptop from hell did finally come up, but not for long.
Bunch of garbage. Nobody believes it except his and his good friend Rudy Giuliani.
You mean the laptop is now another Russia hoax?
That's exactly what.
This is where he's going. The laptop is Russia. Yes.
Gentlemen, I want to stay on the issue of race.
Have to be kidding. Here
Mr.
we go
President,
again with Russia.
We're going to continue on the issue of race, Mr. President. You've described.
Yeah, they changed the subject on that one real fast. In hindsight now, and with apologies, see if you can stomach this one.
Me, because what's happening here is, you know who I am, you know who he is, you know his character, you know my character, you know our reputations for honor and telling the truth. I am anxious to have this race. I am anxious to see this take place. The character of the country is on the ballot. Our character is on the ballot. Look at us closely.
Let me ask some follow-up.
Excuse me.
Please respond, and then we're going to have follow-up.
If this stuff is true about Russia, Ukraine, China, other countries, Iraq, if this is true, then he's a corrupt politician.
All right.
So don't give me the stuff about how you're this innocent baby. Joe, they're calling you a corrupt politician.
Nobody.
Hey, President Trump, I want to stay on the issue of race. We're talking about the issue.
Take a look at the laptop from hell.
President Trump, we're talking about race right now, and I do want to stay on the issue of race. President Trump,
I have to respond to that.
Please.
Because, look,
very quickly.
There are 50...
She even tried to help him out, but he had to keep going back like a dog to its vomit. And finally, as we start to wrap things up today, this one actually doesn't have to do with character or criminality and absolute treason, but in a way it kind of sort of does, and this too ought to really resonate, not only when you look at the attempt by the Biden regime to completely destroy not just American, but world energy infrastructure and a productive economy based on available and inexpensive energy. And of course, oh yeah, let's not forget about the toxic waste dump that they've turned the upper Midwest into, even though they're still lying about it.
Those people live on what they call fence lines. He doesn't understand this. They live near chemical plants that, in fact, pollute, chemical plants and oil plants and refineries that pollute. I used to live near that when I was growing up in Claymont, Delaware. And all the more oil refineries in Marcus Hook and the Delaware River than there is any place, including in Houston at the time. When my mom get in the car and when there were first frost to drive me to school, turn in the windshield wiper, there'd be oil slick in the window.
Hey, ponder the irony of this, folks. If that had been a dioxin slick, we probably wouldn't have to worry about this guy today.
That's why so many people in my state were dying and getting cancer. The fact is those frontline communities, it doesn't matter what you're paying them. It matters how you keep them safe. What do? And you impose restrictions on the pollutions that the pollutants coming out of those fence line communities.
Okay, I have one final
would
question.
Would he close down the oil industry?
It falls.
Would you close down the oil industry?
By the way, I have a transition from the oil industry, yes.
Oh,
I would transition.
That
is a big statement. Because I would stop.
Why would you do that?
Because the oil industry pollutes significantly.
Oh, I see.
Here's the deal. But
that's
you can't
a big
do
statement.
That. Well, if you let me finish the statement, because it has to be replaced by renewable energy over time. Over time. And I'd stop giving to the oil industry, I'd stop giving them federal subsidies. He won't give federal subsidies to the gas. Excuse me, to the solar and wind.
Yeah.
Why are we giving it to oil industry?
We actually do give it to solar and wind.
We
and that's maybe the biggest statement in terms of business. That's the biggest statement.
Okay.
Because basically what he's saying is he is going to destroy the oil industry.
Okay.
Will you remember that, Texas? Will you remember that, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma?
Vice President Biden, let me give you 10 seconds to respond,
Ohio.
And then I have to get to the...
Yeah, right at the end there, he did mention Ohio. That'll do it for now. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.